Well, every time you train hard, you deplete your muscles. And then the muscles respond to that stress by storing more glycogen. So as a part of your training, you deplete your pasta or rice or noodles or sweet potatoes or oatmeal or whatever grain that you eat.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. So last week, I had three guests on for the Unique Events podcast, and it was a lot of fun. And I hope you are laughing along with us as all the guests made fun of one another and of me, of course. If you're looking for a new challenge, you'll really love that one. So we all have different ability levels of what we're able to achieve as runners. And sure, training makes a difference and ultimately allows us to achieve our potential. But at the end of the day, our ceiling is kind of determined by our genetics. So we can't control what others do, and it's one of the most difficult things for us to kind of get our head around, especially when you see others around you taking it for granted while you absolutely work your butt off to try and get the best you can. But one thing we can control that can give us an edge and allow us to reach those goals, we've known this for a while now, is our nutrition. And although eating nutritious foods will give us the fuel to train and race well, there is actually such a thing as eating too well. I'd always wondered about this. Does cutting sweets out completely help? And is there a best way to eat as a runner? And how do we know who to trust when it comes to nutritional advice? Well, I thought I could get one of the best registered dietitians, you will learn the difference in a minute, out there to help me and probably help you with those questions. So I did, and I found Nancy Clark, who's pretty much a household name within the running world. So I hope you enjoy this episode with one of the best experts in the industry. And after a word from EnduroPex, we'll be right to Nancy Clark. Hydrate naturally by adding EnduroPex electrolyte spray to any drink. EnduroPex has zero calories, no sugar, no sweeteners or artificial ingredients. Yep, you heard that right. Just the electrolytes you need. Visit EnduroPex.com and listen out later in the show for a coupon for 10% off. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Nancy.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time, and I can only imagine how many interviews you've done over the years about your, with your kind of background and your history, especially someone as well known in the running world for your, you know, your nutrition book, your workshops, even being on a Wheaties box. You know, it's pretty impressive what you've managed to do. So just a bit of background first. So if you could maybe share when you decided you wanted to work in nutrition. And then was it something you knew all along, or did you just kind of start learning in school about it and think, oh, this is what I want to do?
Well, I actually started being curious about nutrition when I was in high school. I was at a boarding school, and we had jobs, and one of my jobs was working in the kitchen and doing quantity cooking. Mm-hmm. And I just really liked that. And so I figured I wanted to get more involved in the nutrition aspect of food rather than the cooking aspect of it. And then I went to college at Simmons College in Boston and majored in nutrition and did an internship in dietetics, and then worked for a bit, then went back to graduate school where I focused in on nutrition and exercise. And that's back in 1980 when I really started my career as a sports nutritionist.
Mm-hmm. And so then what would you say it was about, you know, working with athletes that you enjoyed? You know, you said you started then working as a sports nutritionist. So why was it athletes or sports people that you wanted to work with rather than just the general population?
Well, before I went back to grad school, I was doing lots of workshops with coaches and teaching nutrition to them to teach their athletes. Mm-hmm. And I was also doing a lot of hiking and biking and running and cross-country skiing. And out of personal interest, I just wanted to know more about how nutrition and exercise connected. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like a good personal fit and a professional need.
Yeah, no, definitely. And obviously you've helped so many people over the years. So it was a great decision you did make at that point. And then one other question related to that that I kind of was wondering about was why, obviously this is a good thing, but why you kind of stayed in the same field and kept going in the same direction of that sports nutrition? You know, this is a time when people seem to change careers, you know, every few years, but you've kept in that field the entire way. Like, what is it about nutrition that you've, that just keeps you so excited and passionate about it?
Well, it's always changing and it's always challenging me. Nutrition certainly is not a static science. I mean, just look at eggs, you know, don't eat eggs, and now say, oh, do eat eggs, it's fine. Or carbo loading is gone all sorts of different directions. It's just fascinating, just all the changes that happen. But I just really like helping people. And there are so many people that struggle with food and weight and exercise and finding the right balance. But I just get great rewards from the clients that I work with and help them be the best that they can be.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of personal satisfaction. There's a lot of variety in what I do because I just don't counsel people one-on-one, but I give workshops locally and nationally. I've done a lot of writing and, you know, writing books, marketing books, and you know, then you have all the blogging and tweeting. It's just forever changing, but it's just interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Keeps me busy.
Yeah, no, it definitely would do that. So then you kind of mentioned a few of these while we're kind of on that topic. How should people listening kind of know with this area that changes so often, what to listen to? Like you mentioned the eggs, that's a perfect example. You know, a few years ago, oh, don't eat eggs, only eat egg whites. And now it's gone back the other way. You need to eat the egg and the yolk. And so how can people know what's kind of like a fad or what to kind of pay attention to?
That's a good question because there's so much information on the internet. Certainly, you can go to the American Heart Association, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the American Diabetes Association. I mean, there are a lot of national organizations related to health and fitness that have information on their website. You can follow blogs of people like Miriam Nelson, and I have a blog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole nutrition network, which is a whole network of nutrition bloggers that will give you good information. So there's a lot of information on the internet. But generally, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. But you know, it's like where do you go? The government has excellent information on their website, you know, myfoodplate.gov. I think it's myplate.gov or myfoodplate.gov. So I would use a website with a .gov or a .org when looking for information. But that said, Gatorade Sports Science Institute has excellent information on their website on a whole variety of topics. GSSIweb.org. PowerBar has a lot of really good information. EAS has good information. So that there are companies that are in the sports supplement industry that also have, you know, quality information looking at a variety of different topics.
So related to that, I know we have a few listeners who, you know, are very skeptical of, you know, pretty much everything and anything that out there with relation to running anything. But when you mentioned Gatorade and Power Bar, and that kind of my immediate thought was those people and jumping to, well, you know, how can we know we can trust something that's funded by Gatorade when, you know, they may have interest in what the results find? And, you know, there's been a lot of media attention in recent years on companies kind of funding research to kind of make it paint them in a positive light. Like, do you have any thoughts on that, like with companies like Gatorade, as that is one of the ones you mentioned?
Yeah, they use, any of these big companies, they use quality scientists who do quality research, and they sign a contract that says that they will publish the research, whatever it says, I mean, positive outcomes, negative mm-hmm. outcomes. I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, but it helps if you know the name of the researcher, which I do, so I can sort of interpret things that way. But people, they do slant things. I mean, you look at the sugar industry and all the studies that are funded by sugar say that sugar doesn't cause obesity. Whereas you look at the studies funded not by the sugar industry and they will paint a different picture. Mm-hmm. So it is a time of extreme confusion. I mean, I often don't know who to believe, but I look at the consensus and use my own common sense and just try to know who the key leaders are in the field. I go to a lot of conferences and workshops and just really try to stay on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, it's confusing.
Yeah.
I get confused too.
Well, that's good to know that we're not alone. And I mean, I guess I'm going to put links to all the websites you mentioned earlier where people can go in the show notes so people can check that out. And obviously I'll put a link to your blog so people can follow along with you and know that they can trust, you know, what you've been doing, especially with how respected and how much, you know, you've done for this industry and for this, for the running world. But so if listeners kind of wanted to go get help with their nutrition, if they were thinking about going to a nutritionist, or someone to help them with their food intake, you know, you've kind of said some resources for them to look at online, but what if someone decided they wanted to go like a one-to-one consultation with someone? I mean, how do we know whether to go to a nutritionist, you know, a dietitian, a wellness coach? What kind of things would you say people should look out for and know, you know, look for in what they trust in an expert?
Well, first off, anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. You can say, I eat, I love to eat, I love to cook, I'm a nutrition expert, I'm a nutritionist. But you have no professional credentials. Whereas a registered dietitian has, you know, gone through at least 4 or 5 years of undergraduate study in nutrition and dietetics, have passed a registration exam, likely have a master's as well. And then you can get a board certified specialist in sports dietitian dietetics, which is a CSSD. So after my name is Nancy Clark, MS, Master of Science, RD, registered dietitian, CSSD, and that's certified specialist in sports dietetics. And if you go up on SCAN, the Sports and Cardiovascular Nutrition Dietary Practice Group of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, so if you go up to scandpg.org, SCAN, Sports and Cardiovascular Nutritionist, Dietary Practice Group.org, they have a referral network. So you can put in your zip code and find a local sports dietitian who would be highly qualified and help you with your, you know, personalized nutrition plan. And that's really the best way to go because each of us is so unique. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people like coffee before they exercise. Others make them too nervous and jittery. You know, some people are gluten-free and have celiac disease, and others, you know, thrive on pasta. I mean, it's just, there's so much individual variability that one-on-one nutrition advice is really what's the most meaningful advice.
Okay. And then would you recommend, what are your thoughts just related to that on getting, you know, one of the nutrition allergy tests? Are those worthwhile for people or is it better to work, you know, with someone based off just, you know, speaking with them one-on-one?
There are allergy tests and there are allergy tests. Mm-hmm. I would make sure to get a quality allergy test and start off by working with a registered dietitian who can really help you pinpoint some of the foods, and then you can take it from there. But so many people these days do have lots of allergies or sensitivities, and again, it makes it that much more important to get that one-on-one advice. But I would go to a dietitian that specializes in allergies or food sensitivities.
Okay, very helpful. Yep, thank you. All right, that just, I don't know if anyone is actually interested in, you know, getting their allergy, you know, looking for allergies, but I thought that might be something people would be curious about, as you did mention, you know, some of the dietary restrictions based on, you know, allergies. So I kind of want to just ask you, as we are in this kind of area, I was thinking that maybe what we could do, I know people would be really interested to hear your take on some of the different, you know, diets or, you know, just things that runners tend to do or runners tend to be a bit confused about right now, just to hear, you know, maybe what your thoughts are on some of these, just to hear your take a bit more on what you believe is best for runners. So I guess maybe if we could start with like the traditional runner diet, a very high carb, you know, lots of pasta, I can eat as many carbs as I want. What are your thoughts on that? Is that the best way to go for runners?
Well, I don't think many people can eat as many of whatever they want.
Yeah, very true.
But when I'm building a sports diet, the first thing I do is estimate how many grams of protein a runner needs.
Okay.
And then once you've got the protein needs met, then you fill in the rest of the diet with grains and fruits and vegetables and, you know, healthy fats.
So why start with protein rather than, you know, the fats or the carbs?
Because the protein, you need protein on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really what is a fundamental need. Carbohydrates, your body stores. Fat, your body stores. But protein, it gets stored in muscle, but you don't want to break down your muscle. So that you want to eat protein on a daily basis. And so it's important to just figure out how much your body requires of protein.
Okay.
And then, let's say, you can fill in the rest.
And do you have any kind of calculation for people I know I've seen some things in the past where it's like, you know, this per gram, you'd have this many grams per gram of body weight or per kilogram of body weight. Is there any, general calculation that you use for this?
Yeah, generally it's in the area of 1.2 to 1.7 grams protein per kilo.
Okay.
But it really depends. If the person is skimping on calories, then they might need more. If they're a high school kid that's rapidly growing, they might need more.
Okay.
If they're building a lot of new muscle, yeah, they're on the higher end of that spectrum. So that, again, this is why you get personalized advice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get the information that you need for your body.
Yep.
And not just the general public.
Okay. Yep. Very helpful. All right. And then what about a traditional kind of runner diet with, that some people do with the marathon, with a carb deficit, 10 days out followed by, you know, heavy carb loading in the day or two before the race. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, every time you train hard, you deplete your muscles. And then the muscles respond to that stress by storing more glycogen. So as a part of your training, you deplete your pasta or rice or noodles or sweet potatoes or oatmeal or whatever grain that you eat to recover and refuel. You store just a little bit more than you did before. So that training is important to enhance the amount of glycogen that you can store in your muscles. And you can only train at your best if you fuel at your best on a daily basis. And so before a marathon, your muscles have the ability to store quite a bit of glycogen. And the most important thing is not to change your diet, but to change your training. So you taper off your training, keep your diet the same, and then you have some extra calories that go toward fully refueling your muscles. So I am not an advocate of making dramatic changes, you know, before an event, because then people say, well, you know, I thought I'd carbo load the all natural way. And they eat tons of dates and raisins and apricots and end up with diarrhea. Other people think that, oh, I got to carbo load. I got to stuff myself with pasta. So they stuff themselves with pasta and garlic bread end up feeling like a beached whale because I just eat way too much. So if you're tapering off your exercise, like I say, that gives your muscles the time that they need to refuel. And you should always be eating a diet. Every meal should be have grains as the foundation, because then you'll have it's grains, fruits, and vegetables, carbohydrates that get stored in your muscles to replace the glycogen that you burn off while you're running.
Okay, so just to clarify, for you, you know the week of a race, your training will be down a little bit, but you want to keep your caloric intake up a little, or not, sorry, up. Keep it the same, so that even though technically you will be taking in more than you're giving out, but it will be worth it on the right day of the race.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, great. So then you mentioned about grains being, you know, the foundation of you know, a runner's diet. And what are your thoughts on, you know, the ancient grains, or, you know, is it okay to just have, you know, regular flour? Should people be trying to have whole wheat? What are your thoughts on grains as a whole?
Well, it's very important that we start looking at the whole day's food intake and not one specific food. So the government guidelines are that half of the grains it can be whole grain, should be whole grain. But that means that half of them could be refined grains. So if a person is having steel-cut oats for breakfast and they're having brown rice for dinner, if they have wrap made out of white bread for lunch, you know, it's not a dietary disaster. So like I say, we have to look at the whole picture. Mm-hmm. In general, the closer to the earth, the less processed, the more whole, you know, the preferable. Yeah. But there are advantages to eating grains that had been fortified with iron, B vitamins, zinc. And if you buy a grain that's all natural, it has nothing added to it. And so you might be missing out on certain nutrients that you would otherwise get. For example, you know, if you buy grape nuts, they're fortified and with, you get 100% of the iron that you need for the day. Whereas if you buy puffins, which are all natural, then they don't have anything added to them, so that they don't offer as much iron. So I say there's a time and a place for whole grains and for enriched grains. And the E in eating is for enjoyment. So I know people who really prefer white pasta. And if they have, you know, their whole wheat toast for breakfast and they have some quinoa and a salad at lunch, if they have white pasta for dinner, is that a problem? Not in my book.
Okay, that's good. Very good to clear that up. And then finally, one area I know people will be interested for me to ask about, your thoughts on the paleo style diet with, you know, not having those whole grains, but just getting your carbohydrates from, you know, vegetable sources, having, you know, a higher fat intake. And, you know, by the sounds of it, protein kind of similar, but the higher fat and having more of the carbohydrate sources being, you know, vegetables and more, you know, whole foods. What is your thought on that?
The problem with the paleo, well, the good thing about the paleo is that it gets people eating closer to the earth, fewer wrappers, more natural foods, which is all good. The problem with it is it's very hard for an athlete who's doing heavy training and needs a lot of calories to get enough calories from carbohydrates, from fruits and vegetables. I mean, instead of eating a bagel, you have to, for breakfast, I mean, you need to eat, you know, $8 worth of strawberries or blueberries, and then you end up with diarrhea. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just not practical if you're really going to fuel your muscles optimally. Protein builds and repairs muscles. Carbs fuel muscles. So when a paleo person has a big, you know, omelet for breakfast, you know, they fill up on protein. They need to make sure that they have potato along with it, a fruit smoothie made with bananas along with it, so that they get the carbs that they're needing. So if someone is really truly paleo, they either fill up on protein or they eat too much fat. which again doesn't really fuel the muscle, doesn't replace muscle glycogen. And glycogen is important for you know, increasing your performance to the next level if you want to sprint or, you know, do a kick at the end of the race, power yourself up a hill. That's when you really rely on the glycogen that's in your muscles. And if your muscles are depleted because they haven't been given enough of bananas or blueberries or spinach to fuel them, then, you know, it'll just hurt performance. So, it, again, this is where you sit down with a dietitian, a sports dietitian, say, this is what, you know, my goals are. This is what I've been eating. What can I do better to enhance my performance?
Yeah, very helpful. And I think we're kind of getting a common theme here, and just seeing everyone listening, you should be realizing just how important it is, you know, kind of the same thing as, you know, getting a coach. Why would you not pay attention to your, you know, diet and have an expert work with you in that way? So everyone listening knows that I have recently, you know, worked with someone on this, and, you know, I've seen big changes. So, you know, this is something worth putting your time into and finding an expert and getting someone to help you with it. So thank you for that, Nancy. All right. So let's kind of, I wanted to ask you something I've been wondering about, and hopefully a lot of other people have, is what is the biggest mistake you would say runners make as it within, with regards to their eating?
They eat at the wrong time of the day. They tend to have this huge dinner at the end of the day, wake up the next morning with a food hangover, ate too much, not hungry, have coffee for breakfast. Lunch, ate too much last night, let me just have a salad for lunch. And then by the end of the day, they're starving. And when people get too hungry, they tend to prefer apple pie and not apples, or carrot cake and not carrots, or potato chips and not potatoes. So they tend to crave sweets, and their body wants quick energy, and it wants concentrated calories, and that often comes in the form of cookies, ice cream, chips, whatever. Then they eat too much, and then they get up the next day and do it again. And so I encourage my athletes to be as nice to their body as they are to their car. If you have a car, you put gas in it, and then it goes. If you have a body, you put food in it, and it goes a lot better. And you want to eat evenly throughout the day. So when I create food plans for people, I give them four food buckets, like a food bucket every 4 hours. So with my schedule, I'll have a breakfast at 7 in the morning, and then lunch at 11, and if you eat lunch at 11, then what do you do in the afternoon? You have a second lunch at 3, and then dinner at 6 or 7. If you're up till midnight, maybe a second dinner at 11. If you're pulling an all-nighter, maybe it's first breakfast at 3. So there's just a food bucket every 4 hours. And people, and they're evenly filled, and that's exactly the opposite of how people in America tend to eat. So I think it's just a huge problem in terms of energy, quality of the diet. We know that when people have good breakfast and lunch, they have better quality food than when they skimp on those meals and blow it on cookies. So that's sort of how I encourage my athletes to experiment and see if that works for them.
Yeah. So a few questions from that. One, so you are more of the camp of kind of making your meals even rather than doing, you know, the old saying, I can't remember exactly what it is, but breakfast like a king, lunch like, you know, whatever the middle one is, slightly less, and then dinner like a pauper? Or are you kind of like the thinking of, you know, each of your meals should be about the same?
They can either be dinner like a king, lunch like a queen, breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, dinner like a pauper, or they can be evenly. But the concept is, by the time dinner comes, you've had 2/3 to 3/4 of your calories. It's not your biggest meal of the day. Yeah.
Okay, good. And then what about, I can tell people, you know, I'm not one of these people, but I know some people out there are saying, okay, well, I run at, You know, I work all day and I finish work at 7 p.m. So I do my run at 7 p.m. So I get done at 9 p.m. And by that point, I'm not hungry and I don't really want to. I don't know what to do because my lunch break is at 12 p.m. So I guess I'll just eat at 12 and then not have anything all the way till 7 because I want to do my run at 7. Like, what about the people who are kind of those evening runners who, you know, may struggle to get their meals
in during
the day?
Well, they really need breakfast, lunch, second lunch, because that will give them the energy to have a quality run. So if they're having a second lunch or a first dinner at 4 or 5, that has plenty of time to digest. And hold off.
Okay.
Eat dinner at 9 o'clock when you need the food during the active part of your day. And those are the people that, among my clients, when they start shifting and really having, you know, adding a second lunch instead of a snack or just, you know, being starved when they're exercising, that they really notice a huge difference in their performance.
Okay, great. Very helpful. And, you know, I'm hoping anyone who, you know, does decide they want to work with you can go to your website and, you know, maybe try and set up a consultation. I don't know if you're taking consultations right now, but, you know, if you are in that situation, maybe you do even more so need to work with an expert and maybe like Nancy or maybe someone else. Okay, so then one thing I was also wondering about was Olympians or, you know, professional runners, these athletes you've worked with. Is there a big difference in the way that they tend to eat with everyone else, or is it actually more similar than most people realize?
Well, I sort of fit into two camps. There are those that are genetically gifted that just kind of get away with eating whatever they want and as much as they want, and they're great athletes. And then there are others that look toward nutrition as being their winning edge, and they try to eat this perfect diet, and they can get a little bit obsessed. And so there's a spectrum of eaters. But I think for the most part, athletes and the general public these days is realizing that, you know, your body is your vehicle to success. And if you're an athlete, you want to take really good care of this vehicle. And if you're a human, you want to keep this vehicle healthy so that how you treat your body and fuel it really impacts not only on current performance, but future well-being and injury healing. And so that I think most athletes these days are really kind of taking their diet to the next level, which is admirable and a very smart thing to do. But that doesn't mean that you need to eat a perfect diet. You can have an excellent diet with a diet that's, you know, 85 to 90% quality foods and 10 to 15% whatever. So I see no problem for someone who's burning off 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 calories a day. You know, if they do the guideline of 10% of calories coming from sugar, if they have 400 calories of sugar a day, if they're eating 4,000 calories, you know, I don't blink an eye.
Okay. That's good to hear you say that, because everyone listening already knows, and anyone who knows me knows, that I have to have a dessert every single day. I can't. I feel like I just crave that something that I feel like, I know it's the bad way to look at it, but I've earned it. And like you mentioned about having a clean diet, you know, I don't hide the fact I do have something every day, you know, even as a elite runner myself. But it's good to hear you say that, you know, you don't want, you shouldn't really need to be, and, you know, as you kind of mentioned, it's not healthy to be 100% clean. So have you seen more people kind of heading towards that way of this, you know, almost orthorexia kind of way of eating where, you know, don't even want to put, you know, one mint into their mouth because that's, you know, unhealthy? Is it, what would you like to say to anyone out there listening who, you know, maybe is, might see some things in themselves that are thinking like, oh, okay, maybe I am getting a bit too carried away.
Yeah. It's when people are very rigid with their food, it's very hard to be social. And, you know, if your friends want to go out to eat and you go, I think I have to go home and mow the lawn. If your diet is interfering with your social life, you want to sort of think about that. Ultimately, relationships are the most important thing. And when people's food gets a little bit too restrictive, it really for its relationships, because there's so much relating that goes on over meals and celebrations that involve food.
Yeah.
And if they're spending too much time thinking about food, then that can be a sign too that they might want to work with a registered dietitian, a sports dietitian.
Okay. And that would be the best way to go if someone kind of recognizes mm-hmm. those thoughts, to go speak to a registered dietitian?
Yeah, that would be a good place to start. I mean, if it's an outright eating disorder, and eating disorder is a psychological diagnosis, but many people start with seeing a sports dietitian because they think, if I can just balance food and exercise and weight, everything will be fine. And sometimes it's not as easily resolved as that.
Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to those eating disorders, do you see more of that in the professional athlete side of things, in the college side of things, or in the general population with people, you know, trying to almost, I don't want to say cheat their way there, but kind of think, oh, if I eat clean, then I'm going to look like, you know, that professional runner, whereas they don't see all the training that person has put in. Where do you see the most of this?
I see it everywhere. eating disorders commonly happen juniors in high school, seniors in high school. There's a lot of stress and pressure to get into college. And also that means they need to separate from their family, and that can be very painful. And so if they just, you know, spend a lot of time, instead of feeling their feelings, if they spend a lot of time, do I eat, don't I eat, how much do I eat, if I eat that much, I'll have to run, you know, how long will I have to run, do I run once a day, do I run twice a day, you know, da-da-da. You can spend up a whole day avoiding your feelings. And so when people struggle with food, it generally serves a purpose. And the purpose is to distract themselves from what's really going on. Just like it's much more fun to, you know, count calories than it is to feel sad or lonely or depressed. A sports dietitian can help people sort of figure out how big a problem it is. And if it's just they need nutrition education, or if they need a little bit more support from a counselor.
Very helpful. And, you know, good to know that, you know, you do see this across the board. So anyone listening right now, if you are kind of struggling with this, you're not alone. You know, there's plenty of people going through this, and, you know, find an expert to help. All right. So one other area, just one final area before we come to the final kick round, that I want to ask you about. You know, you have done many books now. Obviously, you're best known for your sports nutrition guidebook, which again, I'll put a link in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC127. And then you also have your food guide for marathoners. Just based on your experience, what would you say the best way for a runner to fuel for the marathon is?
To experiment on a daily basis with what they eat before they run, how they refuel afterwards, look at their energy levels. And at the end of each day, figure out, okay, what went right, what went wrong, what did I learn, how could I improve this? And so through training, they're able to perfect a way of eating that really supports their long runs and their daily training. And then on marathon day, again, they just want to taper off their exercise, keep their eating the same, and, you know, come up with a plan so they know exactly what they're going to be eating the night before, the morning of, right before the start of the race, during the race, after the race, and that they have a plan. Doesn't mean they need to follow the plan, but at least they've thought about it, and they can have plan A and plan B.
And what about thoughts on gels? You know, should people use gels or Generation UCAN? I know... I'm a big fan of Enduropack's electrolyte spray, which I put in my drinks as well. You know, do you need electrolytes? What things should people be taking during their races themselves?
Well, if they're just going out there for less than a couple of hours, runners don't need electrolytes. If you have, you know, oatmeal and a banana and peanut butter, you get lots of electrolytes. You put some salt in it, you get lots of electrolytes before you go for a run. So it's already in your body. So if it's hot weather, you want to have some salty food beforehand. if you're out there for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, then the sodium that's in these sports drinks is really designed to enhance fluid retention. And so if you drink plain water, it goes in one end and out the other. But if you drink water with stuff in it, like electrolytes, like sodium, then it tends to get retained better. But if you're out there for that long, generally people are eating some sort of food. And so that they can get, you can get electrolytes in food. They're called minerals. So if you have, you know, an orange slice, or if you have some pretzels, or if you're, you know, some people tuck a piece of beef jerky in their mouth to get lots of sodium. There are many ways to do it with normal food. But this is what you experiment with during training to figure out if you prefer products that are pre-packed and pre-wrapped, or if you just want to trust some dates or figs or peanut M&Ms, or, I mean, I kind of like Milky Ways myself. but it's hitting a calorie target. So you want to know how many calories you burn off per hour, and try to figure out, you know, the right amount to replace, and figure out how you're going to hit that target.
Okay. Yep. Very helpful. So again, it comes down to practicing and just figuring out what works for you. You know, I have talked many times about what I use, and I know the listeners, you know, are very aware that I do like the Power Bar gels. And as I mentioned, I like the EnduraPrax spray, as I can just spray it into my mouth. But you got to find what works for you. You know, there's nothing Nancy or I can recommend. It's got to be what works best for you. All right. So we are just going to take a minute to thank our sponsors, and then we will be right back with the final kick round.
For years, we were told we needed to be hydrated, drinking gallons of water before we ran. And not only did that mean needing to pee every 2 minutes, but it was incredibly dangerous for our health, as runners suffered from hyponatremia. In step the sugary, bright coloured syrups to save the day, right? Well, wrong, actually. Not only were they pumping us full of unnecessary sugar and calories we didn't want or need, but they are full of artificial ingredients. Blech. I've been using EnduraPax for years now, and I can honestly say this is the perfect solution to this problem. Just spray EnduraPax electrolytes into any drink and be on your way. It's flavorless, other than a slight lemony taste, of course. It has zero calories, no sugar, no artificial ingredients, and will replenish your electrolytes in a matter of seconds. I love EnduraPax spray so much that during my marathons, I carry a bottle in my shorts and spray it directly into my mouth during the race. Visit EnduraPax.com for more information and use coupon code TinaMuir for 10% off.
Okay, Nancy, I just have 5 more questions for you in the final kick. So starting with the greatest advice you've ever received.
The greatest running advice I've ever received.
I guess it could be anything, but yeah.
Sure. I remember talking to an Olympian, Charlie Spedding, and just kind of asking him, when things get tough, it's like, how do you keep going? He says, you just take negative thoughts and you just throw them into the fire. And take negative thoughts, and you throw them in. So you just keep throwing these negative thoughts out of your head. And then good advice also came from Patty Catalano Dillon, who said that she would just keep asking herself, could I hurt anymore? And generally when you ask yourself, could I hurt anymore? It's like, yeah, I could hurt more. And so I appreciate the mental side of the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. And I like both of those, and especially the throw the negative thoughts in the fire. Like I can actually almost like envision rolling up a ball of paper and throwing it in there. So that's good. Very visual there. All right. Favorite running book or blog other than your own?
I would say Hal Higdon. I think he does a great job.
Okay. All right. Great. What would you like to tell a brand new runner?
That the E in exercise is for enjoyment, and they want to make sure that they enjoy, set up a program that they enjoy, and that they don't make it excruciating. Too many people get a little bit too gung-ho, and so they want to start slow and come up with a plan that you know, works for them, their schedule, and enjoy it. And take pride in their accomplishments.
Yeah, love that, love that. And especially the E for enjoyment, that's, you know, it is the most important thing when it comes to it, but we often forget that. Okay, I'm interested for this one. What is your personal pre-race or pre-run meal?
Well, assuming that the race is in the morning, I eat what I always eat, and I take a bowl and I put in some uncooked oatmeal, and I add one or two of cold cereals. I mean, it could be Cheerios and grape nuts. It could be Raisin Bran sprinkled with granola. It could be, you know, whatever I feel like for the day. And then I put on almonds and I put on some chopped up dates. And that's what I eat just about every day for breakfast. And I love it. And I do the same thing on race day.
Is that dry?
And then I put milk on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that dry? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. And then just something, I should have asked this earlier. What are your thoughts on getting blood work to assess, you know, like a company like an Inside Tracker or something that does your analysis on your blood and kind of gives you recommendations for foods to eat? Do you think that's good for people to keep on top of?
If you have a lot of money hanging around, but if you go to your doctor, I mean, the blood tests that they have are standard blood tests, most of them, that you just have taken when you get your, annual checkup. And so they just get interpreted in through the eyes of sports performance. So, I mean, you can do it. I think the main things that you want to be aware of are iron deficiency among women. Yes.
What number would you say it needs to be?
Well, you look at your serum ferritin, and that's your iron stores. And so, you know, sometimes people, their ferritin is 6, 10, 12, and, you know, under 20 is really low. And there are those that say it should be over 50, others say it should be over 70. But this is a conversation, you know, that you could have with your PCP.
Yeah.
So
iron is one of them, and what's the other one?
Iron is key. If you look at it this way, the more you exercise, if you're eating quality foods, the more nutrients you consume, and it's really unlikely that you'll become deficient in nutrients. The American food supply is not as depleted as people say that it is. And people tend to be living longer and longer. And if you eat, you know, protein to build and repair your muscles at each meal and some whole grains or enriched grains to fuel your muscles, you eat abundant fruits or vegetables in each bucket and have some calcium-rich foods, either from dairy or soy or vegetables or whatever, that you can get the nutrients that you're needing. And I have yet to see studies which show that many athletes are really deficient. And if they are, it might be due to, you know, other medical issues that are going on. But the more you exercise, the more you run, the more you can eat, just eat quality foods and you'll get a ton of vitamins.
Very, very nicely summed up there. Thank you. All right. And finally, back to the final kick. Last question, your favorite running product.
Oh, my running shoes. I love my Mizunos.
Mizunos. Yeah. Okay. All right. That works. All right, Nancy. So if people want to kind of follow along with you, obviously they can go to your blog or your website. And you mentioned about workshops. Do you want to just quickly maybe tell people about what those are? So if you're coming to a town near them, they
sure.
can sign up.
I offer a series of workshops along with exercise physiologist John Ivey. And for this next series, we're going to Columbia, South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Miami area, Nashville, Tennessee, Jacksonville. And we do a day and a half workshop, which is geared toward professionals, but we also invite runners and serious athletes. And it's a wonderful combination of dietitians and trainers and athletes and exercise physiologists and healthcare professionals, and really look at how do you teach, you know, the science of sports nutrition from a, you know, dietitian's perspective, my perspective, and from an exercise physiologist's perspective. So it's really fun. It's So if you go to my website, yeah. nancyclarkrd.com, you'll get information on that. And I hope that it's also available online, so you don't even have to attend it in person, so that we have an online version of it.
Oh, great.
So maybe somebody will be interested.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm sure plenty of people will, and I encourage you to check that out. I will put links in the show notes. And Nancy, thank you so much for your time. I mean, it's been an honor to talk to you today, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure our listeners have
too. Well, I've enjoyed it as well, so thanks for the honor of having invited me. So eat well, enjoy your high energy, and have a great day.
Well, did you guess the biggest mistake runners made? I guess it makes sense, but that would never have been my guess. It's interesting, though. I love that Nancy is not about 100% clean eating. And honestly, I was a little bit nervous that that kind of was what she was going to say when I talked to her before. But those of you who know me know that I'm not a believer in that. And it's nice to know that neither is one of the world's leading dietitians. And I wonder why more of us don't reach out for help with our nutrition. You know, we really should. And we get help with our coaching, we get help with our cleaning, we get help with so many aspects of our life. And it's just interesting to think about why we don't do it with our nutrition when that's, you know, the thing keeping us alive. I'm so glad I've been working with Tony Prazak and actually using Inside Tracker to assess my blood work so I can put my health first rather than just kind of ignoring it and hoping it'll be okay. So actually, if you use my coupon code Tina Muir for Inside Tracker, you can get 10% off. So I hope you got a lot of value out of today, and I'd really appreciate if you could share this or any other episode you enjoy with your friends and family. The more people you can get to share an episode, the more people listen, and that means I can bring on more guests. If you have a local running club or a group that you're a part of, posting it on their wall or sharing it with them helps so much. So thank you so much in advance. And remember, if you have a topic or guest you'd like me to talk to or talk about, you can email me tina@runnersconnect.net with your suggestions or feedback. And if you have something you'd like to discuss with me, I'd love to hear from you. So I just want to say one more thing, which is congratulations to Anne Levy as the final winner of the Jabra earbuds. I'm happy for you and what a great way to go off. Next week, we're going to be talking to Perry Newburn of Moon Joggers. He ran across the US for his 60th birthday, covering about 55 miles a day. And he shares how running helped him overcome his heroin addiction. And it motivated him to do these incredible feats to raise money for charity. You're going to love him. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you have a great week.